Welcome to Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
Welcome to Switzerland in Sound. This is Bob Zanotti. In addition to the newly produced material offered on the website and here on PCJ Media, we also feature some old vintage reports and features from the pre-Switzerland in Sound days. The information they contain may no longer be valid or up to date, but we present this material as a sound document for your listening pleasure. Here is one of those vintage items.
I like to live here because it's a very cozy city. People are very friendly, are extremely friendly. It's not country, but it's not city. It's a mixture in between.
It's ideal. In my opinion, it's the best places in Switzerland or in Europe. You have everything. You have the water here for water sports. You have the mountains in the winter. You have everything. It's not overcrowded. You can still find peace and quiet here.
This is Bob Zanotti, and those two people you just heard were talking about Thun, a distinctly medieval town just 20 minutes to the southeast of the city of Bern. Thun lies at the western end of Lake Thun, with the famous resort of Interlaken at the opposite end of the lake, just 15 minutes away. Thun is known as the gateway to the Bernese Oberland, and from there you enjoy a breathtaking view of the Bernese Alps towering above the lake. The beauty of the town of Thun and its surroundings may well explain why it has a colorful history. The first thing you notice when approaching the town is its beautifully preserved castle, which is a reminder of Thun's noble past. The earliest known settlements around Thun go back to the Stone Age. We jump through the centuries to the year 1000 AD for its official founding. And from this point on, we encounter two leading families in European history which dominated the town's further development. Here's Dr. Jan Keller, Thun's official archivist.
The family of the Zähringer and the family of the Kyburger. And the Duke Berchtold V of Zähringen built the castle of Thun with four impressive watchtowers. Berchtold V of Zähringen was the founder of the city of Bern.
Was there a lot of communications in those days between Thun and Bern? Were relations good between the two towns?
Relations were not so good, but in the 14th century, Bern was buying Thun, and then Thun was belonging to Bern.
Thun did have a certain military tradition.
Yes, like all big towns in our country, Thun had a military tradition, especially in the defense of Bern and his area. Thun played a very important role because it was and still is the gateway to the Bernese Oberland.
And this military tradition stayed, and that brings us even up to the relatively modern times.
Yeah, that's correct. In the year of 1818, the Confederation founded the first Swiss training center for army officers here in Thun. And this tradition remains today. Thun is the largest military place in Switzerland.
Dr. Jan Keller. One of the nicest things about Thun is its compactness. Although there have been some changes over the centuries, Thun's basic medieval character has remained intact, and that's obvious from the architecture of the old town. Probably the best place to go to get the feel of the place is the Rathausplatz, or Town Hall Square. I took up a position next to an old fountain in the center of the square for a look around and a chat with town hostess Susan Meister. So let's go down to what we can describe as the very heart of Old Thun.
Right, it's the heart of Old Thun. It's the plaza where people get together, where they meet, where we have farmer markets, where we have artist markets, where we have folklore demonstrations. Okay. And it's especially in summertime, very pretty with a lot of geranium. You know, geranium, our flowers that grow very well here. The whole plaza, the whole square is full of geraniums.
And of course, dominating the square and giving it its name is the old Rathaus, or town hall, the town council meets here. How old is it, this building?
The building is out of the 16th century.
And the material is sandstone, I believe, isn't it? It's like so much of the Bernese construction.
Right, it's sandstone. You have, by the way, on the left side here, one of the oldest houses that we have in Thun out of stone.
1412, I think, if I read correctly.
Right, and it's really the first house that they did build out of stone. Before, you know, before they had, every houses were out of wood. All these houses around the square are from a different century. You have the one over here, the Burger House. You can see that has a totally different style again, and it's out of another century. And then you have the house that was actually, it's a restaurant now, but it's from a guild.
Yes, the Guild of the Butchers, I see.
The Guild of the Butcher, right. Uh-huh. And it has another style again because it comes from another century. Yeah. And you have police headquarters over here, which is another old house. It was built as a hospital. And so the different influences from the centuries are mixed here together very well, I think.
We're looking at another street, Obere Hauptstraße, Mrs. Meister, and this one is really at the heart of Old Thun, and as we look, the metal crown, beautiful piece of work, is hanging from the Krone restaurant, the Crown restaurant, as a sign of the restaurant, and it's a beautiful picture. I think this is a classic camera position, isn't it, for a visitor to Thun?
Right, that's one of it. Thun is a typical Zeringer city. The Zeringers, the big families that founded quite a few cities in Europe. You think about Bern, you think about Freiburg, but you think also about Freiburg in Breisgau in Germany. Thun was built from the same family, and you can see the style they have. Here we don't have arcades like they have in Bern, but we have what is very seldom, we have these high pedestrian walkways.
Sort of elevated sidewalks, we might say, yes, above the streets.
And underneath are shops, there are boutiques and shops.
Sort of cellar boutiques, I guess we could say.
Right.
Mrs. Meister, if we could move over just away from the fountain for a moment, here is another, unbelievably beautiful and certainly classic photographic position of Thun for any visitor, the landmark of Thun, and that is the castle.
Yeah, it looks like a fairy tale castle.
It certainly does.
When you come in from the freeway and at night it's light, then you can see that it's really a fairy tale castle. But when you are standing close to the castle, it has nothing to do with a fairy tale castle. It really is a fortress. Mm-hmm. It's a hard rock fortress, which was very difficult to get in former times, and it was built for that. The castle itself is in a very good condition. You have the old castle and you have the new castle. In the old castle, you have the exhibition, and it's an exhibition of ceramics, but it's also an exhibition of toys. All kind of toys are there, and especially the old organ from a ship. Yes. And then you have the arms, of course. You have a beautiful view over the city when you're on top of the tower.
It has to be seen to be believed. Right. What a view it is.
And especially in all season, because you can see the changing of seasons. And then you have the new castle. And the new castle is office place. You know, we have our churches, our court is actually living in the castle.
It's a living history, really, that continues today.
Right.
And that is the sound of the bellows organ that was retrieved from a lake steamer in the year 1864. It was used to entertain visitors on board the steamer Bellevue, which sank in a storm. The organ is but one object on display in a part of the Thun Museum in the castle. In this particular area in the museum, old instruments, toys, and objects relating to tourism are featured. Elsewhere in this popular museum, there are rich collections of old arms and ceramics from the region, all displayed in the genuine medieval backdrop of the Castle of Thun. And according to assistant curator Barbara Koenig, the museum covers such a wide range of interests that it's very hard to say which part of the museum is most popular with visitors.
It depends what you are looking for. If you come here with children, I think the part where we are just now will be the most popular. If you are here with elderly boys who want to see weapons, so we have to go upstairs and see the weapons. And if you are interested in all sorts of ceramics, so you better go to the cellar.
And I can tell you from my own personal experience that the museum in the Castle of Thun is a real favorite with children who never tire of it, it seems. So far, we've concentrated on the history and culture of Thun, but it also has its industrial side. Bearing in mind Thun's military past, it's interesting to note that it was the army which brought industry to the town in 1861, following the completion of the Bern Thun rail line 2 years before. Thun was chosen as the site for the first Swiss Army munitions factory, which still exists, as well as other military establishments. Today, they employ some 2,000 people. Over the years, other related industries developed, mainly in the metals field. Today, there are at least two industrial names based in Thun, which are known to a wide public all over the world, and in two very different fields.
1943 mit einem jugendlichen Hilfsarbeiter hier in Thun angefangen. 1980 haben wir 400 Leute beschäftigt. Wir haben Hebezüge gemacht, den bekannten Habeckerseilzug. Dann haben wir Luftseilbahnen, Sessenbahnen, Skilift.
That's Willy Habecker, founder of the Habecker Machine Company of Thun. He started his business in 1943 with one young assistant, and by 1980 he employed 400 people. The name Habecker became famous for reliable and advanced lifting tackle. Later on, the company became equally famous for its cable cars and cableways of all types, monorails and ski lifts, which have been installed all over the world in some 40 countries. In a completely different field of activity, there's the Gerber Cheese Company, known abroad under the name Swiss Knight. In the last century, the company started exporting Swiss Emmental and Gruyere cheeses, only to find that much of it spoiled in transit. A way was sought to guarantee the freshness and quality of exported cheese. The answer was a Gerber invention which is today called processed cheese. This not only kept the cheese fresh, but it also made it very spreadable. Today, the round cartons of individually wrapped portions are a familiar sight. Walter Eichenberger explains how the process works.
The cheese is melted, at the same time adding acid, citric acid, for instance, which we call melting salt, emulsifying salt. It's a natural product. It all starts from a completely natural product. The only thing we do is melting the cheese, in other words, pasteurizing the cheese, making it more capable. Processed cheese has become an everyday product everywhere in the world, and also for our company, it's still a very important export product. Out of our total production, we export approximately 50%, and the remaining 50% are sold in the Swiss home market.
With the exception of the Gerber Cheese Company, most of Thun's mainstay industry is in the metals and metal processing sector. In other words, the town's heavy industry eggs are very much in one basket, and this is a source of worry for Jan Willem Akket, an economist with the Thun local government.
That's right, that's the point, and that's one of my jobs I'm trying to do here. That is to diversify the economy of Thun away from this metal. The whole metal processing industry in the world is now in a crisis. There are too many firms producing metal products. And as you know, we have a very high wage rate in Switzerland. So the few firms we have here really have to fight for their market share. And they're having a difficult time at the moment. What we're trying to do here is, for example, we succeeded in establishing here the shower lux firm, all sorts of gadgets you use in bathrooms, and shower lux has its headquarters here in Thun. There are many firms here in Thun, smaller ones, which like to expand, and what we're doing here is also help those. Not only in the service sector, also in main industry, for example, wood processing, but also in the car industry.
And what about the unemployment situation in Thun?
Well, it's reasonable. It's about average. About several hundred people are always unemployed.
Now, what about the labor force itself? Do you have a lot of people who come in from the outside to work in Thun? Is that a problem almost?
We have 9,000 commuters who come into Thun to work here.
Of course, the town would like to get that tax money, which it doesn't get from those individuals because they live somewhere else and the income tax is paid to where you, the place you live.
That's a very, very important problem. We have a rather low revenue here in Thun due to the fact that there are many people who come to earn their money here and pay their taxes somewhere else. And on the other hand, Thun as a central community has to offer a lot of services and to have a lot of small communities around it.
That take the services.
That take the services.
And don't pay for
it. And
them.
Don't pay for it.
Also a serious problem in many other Swiss communities, incidentally, and one of the prices to be paid for a decentralized tax structure. You're listening to Roundabout Switzerland, coming to you from Swiss Radio International in Bern. This is Bob Zanotti. A traditional song in praise of the beauties of the Lake of Thun. And the passenger boats operating between Thun and Interlaken and points on the lake in between can safely be called one of Thun's most successful tourist attractions, with 1.2 million passengers carried in 1983 alone. The boats are in service only in spring and through early autumn and offer one of the most relaxing and picturesque ways of spending a day in the sun. Or if the sun's too strong, just go inside to the onboard restaurant for anything from a quick drink to a full course meal as the beautiful scenery of the lake and the mountains pass by. Many people don't have any particular place to go, while others use the boats for transportation to favorite tourist spots, ranging from castles along the lake to caves. Emil Suter of the Lake of Thun Navigation Company suggests the most popular routes.
There are two routes from Thun to Spiez or from Thun to Interlaken, and a little bit less is also to the Belters Caves.
Of course, those are very beautiful caves on the lake, and you can make a stop there. As a matter of fact, you can spend a whole day on the Lake of Thun, can't you, making different stops and seeing castles and attractions like the caves?
Oh, yes, that's possible. You can begin morning at 8 o'clock, and you end at 9 in the evening. You may stay on the boat from the morning till the evening, or you may stop at any station you like. There's a very good restaurant on the boat, and you may have any meal as you like.
And in the summer, of course, when the boats are operating, there are some special attractions in the evening.
There are evening trips from June to September. Music, dance, folklore. These are very popular.
And if you get frustrated just being a passenger on a boat, or if you've always wanted to learn how to sail, well, the Lake of Thun offers just what you're looking for. There are several sailing schools in and around Thun, with full information available from the Thun Tourist Office. Charles Thomas is a British sailing instructor who thinks you couldn't pick a better place to learn.
I think the Lake of Thun is renowned throughout Switzerland as the best sailing lake there is. It has very good wind conditions and also many harbors and places to keep a boat or to hire a boat.
And what about this very popular sport of windsurfing?
Yes, it's a very popular sport on the Lake of Thun.
Well, let's take the classic form of learning to sail with a boat. How much time would it take a beginner to really have the fundamentals to get the permit, which I think you have to be able to sail on the lake here?
Yes, not for all boats. For boats with more than 150 square feet of sail area, you have to have a permit to sail. For the smaller boats, not. Mm-hmm. From somebody who has never sailed before until they have this permit, it usually takes about 2 weeks.
So in other words, a person could plan a vacation or holiday, come here, and find everything that they need to relax, to enjoy themselves, and to successfully learn to sail all within a two-week period.
Yes, that would be no problem.
And do you get many English-speaking visitors coming to learn to sail here?
We get quite a few. Not that many English people, more Americans. The biggest problem is, I think, that There's not many people realize that they can sail on the Lake of Thun. They come here on holiday, and they only find that it's possible when they're here. And then usually they've already planned their holiday, and it's too late.
So there you have a word to the wise. To sum up the town of Thun in a few words, it has just about everything the average person is looking for when choosing a place to visit in Switzerland. It offers good hotels and good food, plenty of folklore and other cultural activities. One of its outstanding highlights is the annual Seenachtsfest, a festival of music and fireworks over the lake. And then there are lots of sports and other recreational activities, and even a casino with music, dancing, floor shows, and roulette. But the town seems to have suffered somewhat from its image as the gateway to the Bernese Oberland. After all, you usually don't stop at the gate, you go through it. Marcel Mueller of the Thun Tourist Office argues that you can accomplish just as much staying in Thun as you can by passing through it.
Here in Thun, you can spend beautiful holidays. Thun is a hub of transportation with as many public transports as possible. For instance, if you want to go and see the capital of Switzerland, Bern, you can take the train. Or if you want to visit the famous Jungfrau Joch, you can take the postal coach to Interlaken. You can take the boat to Interlaken, and you can take the train. And then from here you have all the connections to all the mountains in the whole Bernese Oberland.
Everyone, of course, involved in tourism would like to see the numbers of overnight stays go up, more and more visitors coming to town. But there's also a political issue here, too. Thun is only so big, the building is limited. What do you think is a realistic goal for the growth of tourism in Thun? To what extent will you allow it to grow before you put a halt to it?
At the moment, we have 650 hotel beds here. We have various chalets and private facilities. We have a camping ground. We're going to plan to build a new hotel in the future. But I would say here in Thun, we want to put quality first before quantity. So we want Thun to keep its genuine character.
Marcel Mueller of the Thun Tourist Office. And that ends our look at Thun, the medieval town on the lake of the same name, located southeast of the Swiss federal capital, Bern. Marco Delavo was our technician today. This is Bob Zanotti in the studio, thanking you very much for joining us for this edition of Roundabout Switzerland. Thank you.
If you want more information about Switzerland in Sound, check them out online at www.switzerlandinsound.com.